Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio's first Friday Toast of the Arts and Park Show with the National Parks Arts Foundation, where your hosts, Nancy and Lisa, the crazy mother-daughter travel team, traveling full-time on our Love Your Parks tour across the country, documenting parks and public lands for our Parks and Travel magazine. And every first Friday, we are so excited because we get to chat with artists who have a one-month-long residency in a national park. And today we get to chat with Andy Warner. He was on our show back in 2019 when he spent a month in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and he's gone back. And apparently he could be there longer than a month. You never know what could happen with these amazing residencies. So number one, check it out. Go to nationalparksartsfoundation.org. You can be an artist, a painter, a poet, a musician, a dancer, a filmmaker, a photographer. It doesn't matter.
Writer.
You can apply. Writer. Excuse me. I didn't put author there. You can do that. They are open to all mediums and genres of art. And Andy is a comics journalist, and he rocks what he does. And when he was back there in 2019, he was documenting what was going on with people after the volcano happened in 2018. So welcome back, Andy. How are you?
Thanks. I'm great. And it's great to be talking to you guys again.
Yeah, this is cool. So 2019, you decide you're going to figure out what was going on. How did the people feel and the land and just kind of go, because this, I know we talked a lot about even comics journalism and something that is very unique. It's not every day we get to talk with a journalist who's doing it through comics. And I think it's important because we're so visual these days that it's more of where we are now, right? As a society. Do you see it growing in popularity?
Yeah, it for sure still is. I mean, a lot has happened between 2019 and the spring, winter of 2021 when we're talking.
No kidding.
You know, the whole year of 2020, which kind of feels like about 10 years packed into one.
Yeah.
So every industry is in turmoil right now, but there's more cartoonists making nonfiction comics than ever. And there's been a lot of change, even in the industry, since we talked last. The piece that I was working on for the residency in 2019 appeared on the Nib, which is still the premier spot to find nonfiction comics and comics journalism on the web. But almost immediately after we talked, there was a huge funding crisis with that, and it went independent. And it's been a dramatic time in the industry. And then immediately after that, the COVID crisis happened and the following recession. But people are still making comics and reading comics. And comics is actually, as a whole in the publishing industry, continued to grow throughout all of this, even as the rest of publishing generally shrinks. So there's more readers than ever seeking this
That's
stuff
awesome.
Out, and there's more cartoonists than ever making it, and
cool.
sort of a wider array of different kinds of cartoonists, like in ages and race and gender, and it's just sort of a more diverse place, even than it was 2 years ago, especially than it was, you know, when I started out in the industry like a decade ago.
Well, another thing too, we just did an interview. Mae Edwards is an amazing musician, and she's also a writer and chef. She's an awesome lady, and she just did a graphic. It was a multimedia project. She took her music and she also put it into like a screenplay, but it's a graphic novel. So using cartoon and imagery with music, and then she had people acting, and it's all on YouTube. It was an amazing story that she told. It was really about LGBTQ, and I always get that wrong, don't mean to. It was really about the story of, you know, women coming from back east into L.A. to make it big as musicians and dealing with all these different issues of, you know, their genders and the way people profile them. And it's really effective. And I was thinking of you with that because it was like, wow, this – there's no end to this. I mean, I know that there's animation, mm-hmm. but this wasn't animation. This was like a book. And I was thinking about you on that interview. I'm like, dude, this is cool.
But you know, our
brains
are...
Yeah, it's a really captivating medium.
No, go ahead.
It's a really captivating medium. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it's very plastic. It can be put to a ton of different uses. And yeah, that's one of the most exciting things about comics. And it's also, you know, as it's kind of come into its own and being taken seriously, that lifts all the different ways that people make comics and people see comics. And so, you know, like nonfiction comics, comics journalism, what I do used to be a very small corner of this larger thing. But as the whole thing has grown larger and gotten taken more seriously and sort of entered into the general consciousness more, there's more people doing that too.
You know, I just think that people's brains are more visual, and so when there's a comic or any kind of photograph or a picture or whatever, you go there first, and then the backup is text.
You know, since we last talked, I think I've had two books come out actually, and they're both so. Another history book about utopias. Mm-hmm. Or had that just come out when we talked?
I think so. I think
anyway,
sounds familiar.
Yeah. So then I just finished another one about animal domestication throughout history.
Oh,
and
I want to see.
And I'm working on another one about plants right now. But I really see comics as like a amazing teaching tool. And I mean, I've kind of staked my career on it, but it was a successful one for me when I was a kid, and just the way that people respond to my work and nonfiction comics in general, especially if they have a sort of journalistic or historical bent. I think it really is, you know, it's a profoundly powerful thing. And in the age of screens, that's just as true. There's tons of people trying to figure out how to make these things really work on our screens. I've even done some work for, you know, these science comics getting developed for this app called TinyView that's trying to do that. The Nib has experimented with shifting the form to digital as well. But yeah, it's a powerful thing, either in print or online. You know, it's a form of getting across information that's really dense visually, but it also sort of requires reader participation instead of like passively watching something. You need to like read through it. And I think that sort of activeness maybe makes things stick more. I don't really know, but it's powerful.
But you can also put it into different languages. Hard in print. That's really expensive. But you could put it into different languages. I find that exciting.
Yeah, totally.
The other thing with what you're doing is your words have to be shorter. And we're at that age.
Yeah.
Like we talk about this even with our magazine and some of the writers. I'm like, dude, cut down. People just get to the point. You know, it's true. It's like the more you have to wade through it, the less people are going to retain, because at the same time, we have so much media in the world, so much art, and it's got to just have that effect. And that is getting to the nugget of it. And that's the beauty of it, too. It's like those words have to be really effective because you've got one bubble. That's it. And then another bubble.
Yeah, space is at an extraordinary premium.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really the influence of graphic design and poetry is really strong in comics because you have to be very mindful of design, because even if you're not working in pages, if you're working in screens, you're still sort of working in this field through which the reader's eye travels. And so you need to be mindful about how to guide it. And that can, of course, be put to all these different tricks, like using schematics and timelines and cutaways and whatever. There's all these like visual tools that you can deploy that are mainstays of graphic design. And then poetry, of course, often is about the economy of language and the like use of editing for impact. And comics really demands that, because there's this like terrible trick that happens where once you get about half full in a like comic image with text, the reader just ignores it and sort of skips over it. They can spend, you know, 20 minutes reading through an entire broadsheet newspaper page. But if you accidentally overload a panel with text because there's that visual element there, it's off-putting for whatever reason. It's sort of the other side of what makes comics so captivating.
Yeah, because
You have this handoff from visual to text, to visual to text, to visual to text. And so, yeah, you really do have to be very careful. And with nonfiction, of course, that leads to the ability or the honing of the ability to take really complicated things like the entire world and boil it down to interesting narratives that you're trying to get across to fascinate people.
You know, the thing is, your brain, it's going right brain, left brain, right brain, like, okay, picture text, picture text.
Say that real quick, like the
It goes back and forth, back and forth. And so I think that the for most people, I think the visual is going to take precedence. And, you know, so if you have a lot of text with a cartoon, then they're going to be slightly annoyed. Because they're like, oh, gosh, where should I be? Should I be reading? But I really want to look at it. And there's movement in comics. You know, there's movement and there's more feeling sometimes, depending on the kind of person you are as a reader. Like some people are like, oh, I don't even want to look at the cartoon. I just really want to read the text. But then why pick up a comic book? So you know
well,
that people
read just headlines and decide what's going on in politics by just reading
headlines. I think that's so funny.
Yeah,
so,
unfortunately.
Well, but that doesn't
well,
the point
you are
the headlines.
Absolutely right. You can only, you're totally right, though. You can only, like, sin in one direction in comics, and that's towards too much text. Like, there's great examples of wordless comics. Or even wordless sequences within comics that otherwise are wordy. But there is no real great example of only text comics. I mean, there's like experimental stuff, but.
Well, and then there's Mad Magazine, which we talked about before. And, Mad Magazine, it's all. It's all sound.
And did we talk about Henry the Mute?
Oh,
do you remember that comic, that Henry the Mute with the peanut shaped head? Do you know what I'm talking about? Henry the Mute?
So it's like, got to look at it.
No, Henry the Mute. And it was, he couldn't talk because he was a mute. And you could never do that now. But I remember Henry was in the LA Times and all these major newspapers. And he was a little bald headed. And his head was kind of shaped like a peanut. And he was a mute. And he never really spoke because he was a mute. So, but he could, the point was he wasn't dumb. He had thoughts. And so everything was in the thought bubble, which is different than the speak bubble. You know what I mean?
Totally.
That's cool.
Yeah. So,
Absolutely. So
Henry the Mute.
I think, but that's cool. I think that should be allowed because people do have that. I mean, it's not like it doesn't exist in our world, you know? Go ahead.
No. Go on.
I was going to ask, because of we will get to Hawaii. When you're in Hawaii, you're in the art house. You're in the party house.
That's true.
The art Airbnb, as they say, over in Hawaii, with ocean views right outside the park, Hawaii volcanoes. It's like, hello, we're a little jealous. No matter where we travel, you know we're going to be jealous of it, right? But
it's nice.
In regards to this amount of content, what I always find interesting, too, is just even with what we do in magazines and everything, it's like, okay, less is more, right? But sometimes you have to explain stuff, and you also don't want to – you don't want to over-explain, right? And at the same time, people need to know something that's unique and different, and you also don't want your audience to be – you don't want to treat them as though they're dumb. Like, you know, it's like, hello. If I over-explain it, it's saying that you don't know anything. You know what I mean? It's like you have to have that balance of if they don't know, tweaking their interest to go and learn about it themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think one thing that guides me a lot of times is trying to figure out why I, like, find something fascinating. And I find a lot of stuff fascinating. I'm endlessly fascinated by the world. But figuring out why, you know, this or that is interesting and then starting to learn about it, being able to, trying to figure out how to sort of explain that fascination to the reader is the thing that I always try to do. So not like explain, not set out to like necessarily tell the whole story of X or Y, but explain why it's an interesting story and make it interesting to the person. Yeah, I don't, because there's endless opportunities to learn about infinite things in the world. You just have to figure out the narrative in it, the story that makes the most in the page.
Doing good advertising. You know?
What?
It's like doing good advertising. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like.
Absolutely. I mean, but absolutely. It's, well, it's like thinking about why you're thinking, you're talking to yourself, sort of. You're like trying to figure out why it's interesting to you. And then imagining yourself at, you know, a dinner party or something like that, and telling somebody about the story that you need to get off your chest because you just, you know, read about it in the newspaper this morning. And like what urge,
like,
what makes,
don't you
where
just
that urge comes
dude?
From. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like
put
formulating that urge and making it about not being boring and pedantic, but being like interesting and unexpected.
Right. Mm. Without demanding that they listen. That's the other art.
Yeah, totally. No, you want like, them to be piqued, you know? Yeah, exactly. Rather than expect to have
you
their
You can't
ear.
Say dude 20,000 times, so I do. But
dude.
listen, we just heard a PSA in Alabama when they went dude instead
dude.
Of dude. Dude.
That's
the commercial
dude.
On the radio, we're like, dude, stop
dude.
Making so much trash. Don't trash. That's not cool. And
dude.
I'm like, no, you can't be doing that. No, but I mean, it's all right. I mean, if you want to do it, do it. But it was just different. But anyway, nothing against Alabama or Alabama accent.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Now, going to Hawaii, I know you're in Berkeley, right? So now you're in Hawaii again.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time you were on the show, I remember you were like, I'm coming back. I got to follow up on this. So you're there, and this could extend longer, right? Because you can, and that's awesome.
Yeah,
I think
mean,
the National Parks Arts Foundation is really awesome with what they do. But yeah, what are you doing? Are you continuing the story from the volcano to see how people are now? What's the story this time?
It's sort of that. It's an expansion of the story, basically. Event and its aftermath form kind of the first part, but then I really wanted to broaden the piece into looking at the way that volcanoes and being around them shape this island in general, because I mean it's really a crazy place for that. Like every speck of dirt practically on the entire thing is created by relatively recent geological action by volcanoes, and it's such a varied landscape that was fascinating to be in. But then thinking about the way that that actually affects the people that live on it and with it became a really interesting idea to me. And so I expanded it beyond just the 2018 eruption to look at, in particular, the stretch of coastline and Kau, sort of between where I live and the park, but also over into Puna, that's really been affected by the volcano in the last 150 years, but also affected by so much else, you know, earthquakes triggering tsunamis, even things like development plans and dreams that come together, and then community outrage at the idea of one of the last beaches on the island without a towering hotel over it, getting a towering hotel over it stops it, and those ruins, you know, recede into the jungle. So it sort of became about ruins in a certain way. These different ruins created by these different forces of nature, with the volcano at the heart of it, but really looking at this idea of resiliency, because both for the Hawaiians who have lived here for generations and newcomers who, you know, like the people of Leilani Estates who had a rift open up in their backyard and take out
right.
half the subdivision.
Dude.
There's this dude, right?
Dude.
There's this sort of rawness to like cataclysm here that
it's crazy.
Is, I think, sort of a lesson actually for a lot of the rest of us, because even though volcanoes are actually one of the few things that isn't, you know, affected in its frequency or intensity by this increasingly changing world we've sort of delivered to ourselves, the way that people react to natural disasters and the way that natural disasters affect people is sort of relevant to it, because this is a space that has sort of always been disrupted. Like, the coastline is constantly changing. Communities, going back to ancient Hawaiian times, appear and disappear on the coasts because of things like earthquakes and tsunamis and lava flows, massive disease epidemics after European contact. This is an island that has seen like a succession of small apocalypses here and there. And I think that there's a lesson for this world where, you know, Houston floods and New Orleans floods and New York floods and the Bay Area is cloaked in wildfire smoke for 2 years going in the summers. And, you know, like, our landscapes are becoming sort of disrupted on a more regular basis as well. There's this uneasy notion of 100-year floods becoming like 5-year floods and things like that. And so being and visiting the space and looking at how the people, both old and new, live with it, has become sort of the new project. And so I took that original NIB article and that I produced last time I was here, and in between applying for the residency again, I actually expanded it to a mini comic of about 20 pages, and then coming back here, I've now expanded again to be about 80 pages. So it's like a novella.
Oh, it's going to be a book. Wow.
Yeah, like a little book.
That's a book. That's awesome.
Yeah. And
that's
so
exciting,
that's,
and I think it's,
you know,
timely. With COVID and everything, it's kind of the same story in a way. Like, how
the apocalypse
is
always timely.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I think it's also the resilience you talk about. And also that whole, the runes, I love that, resiliency in the runes, because what's interesting, when you go to runes, there's a resiliency because you're still going there. They're still alive in some way, right? Like, if you go to an Indian mound, we went to one in Arkansas, it's alive. I mean, I know they were burying trash and things in there, but it's like, it's fascinating. They may have got part of DeSoto's sword in there, which is interesting. I'm dying to find out if that actually happens, but if they're still investigating. But when you look at lava's at, like, it's like the ash, but it's hard, right, in a way. So there's this, the fire is this resiliency, and you know it's resilient because it keeps coming back, and it reminds us all, like, hello, disease, the whole COVID thing. It's like, every few years, there's going to be something, because Mother Nature is going to say, hello, we need to clean up the environment a little bit, and we're going to do this. I know that sounds terrible, and nobody wants to hear me say that. Oopsie, Nancy, starting to sound like Joy Adamson, right? Bad. I'm not saying that it's nice, but I'm just saying. The dinosaurs are going to come back during some big, like,
I know,
wildfires or earthquakes
or
something, and all of a sudden,
species
here
now.
Will come from the from the center of the earth. Here comes
Jurassic
Tyrannosaurus
Park,
Rex.
You're in Jurassic Park land. You know, although Jurassic Park was filmed out in Hawaii somewhere,
all
right? But
big reptiles are asleep in eggs
the
at the center of the earth.
Jeez. Hey, but the dinosaurs are cool. Wouldn't you like to see a dinosaur, Andy, like right now? If you walked out on the deck.
I mean, yeah, obviously, clearly.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Some people would know. But, yeah,
I mean,
it'd be cool.
Very high walls.
Man, I just think it's cool. So is the what's it like in winter in Hawaii? That's what I want to know. Like, it's been snowing here in Nashville. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Warm.
So the volcano is actually erupting again, which is new since I was last here. So I was here in 2019 during the brief dormant period after the 35-year eruption of Kilauea. It was like quiet for almost 2 years, I guess, and then it just started erupting again this past December. And so it's refilling its lava lake.
I knew you were coming.
The Vog is back. What? It did know I was coming, yeah. But we're down south in Kau, and so the trade winds actually kind of blow it over to the Kona coast, to those poor people up there. So it's windy, but it's nice, you know. And then one time there was an enormous rainstorm that washed out the road on the way to my kids' preschool, and my wife and I had to drive 4 hours around the saddle road, around the entirety of Mauna Loa, to pick them up on the other side. So, I mean, it's still Hawaii, so the like realness of natural disasters
awesome,
is very close here.
But I know I say that's awesome. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't that, but to me, that's about real
the
living.
Saddle road is very pretty. I mean, we weren't super stressed out that the school was going to flood or anything, but.
But
it
I don't know.
Experience. And then that storm was actually the one that came and washed out Big Sur like 2 days later.
Oh, no way. The one with the whole thing. Big Sur gets nailed.
Yeah.
Big Sur, like I've driven that road and I remember driving and I'm not good with heights at all in mountain passes, but I've done just about every mountain pass that you can do like in Colorado and stuff like, I've done it. I just have to listen to Bob Marley. And but that Big Sur, I remember, like, I'm going to wee. I'm going, doing it. I'm going to drive. But I'm like, I have that thing in my chest, like, uh-oh. And I'm telling you, I'm like, dude,
really.
No, people are going to, I know it's beautiful. Like, you know, that's when you have a fear like that, there's like this love-hate relationship with it because you want to do it.
Yeah.
You find it, it's crazy. But I remember telling Nancy as we were going, I'm like, dude, no way. Like, la, la, la. This is freaky. We're going down. And she knows I actually will just swear really loud at roads like this. But, and there was a guy who crashed into the side and his car was half and half and they were coming to get him.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, see, like, holy crap, this stuff can happen. It's real. That's me, you know, and that's how I feel. Like, we have a friend who does a bread truck route through Northern California. He runs a bread company, delivery company, and he took us on his bread route. Dude, it was cool. Like, it was a cool. Well, you know, you're in California, you know Berkeley, but all the way up through Mendocino and everything. I mean, that whole thing, that whole route. And I'm sitting there, clang, clang, clang. I'm going to fall
out.
He
killed a snake. He killed a snake.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, he did.
He ran over his snake.
Bad juju. But this whole thing about these cycles, that's really fascinating. It's got to be like, are you feeling very cyclical? Like you're going back. That's a new cycle, but it's still part of the old. Like,
oh, for sure.
Kind of interesting.
I mean, especially it bookending a year and a half, like the last year and a half, because you know we left here last time in July of 2019. So it's been quite a time. Coming back to a place is very meaningful always as well. And especially the tropics to me. I grew up in Panama and St. Croix. A lot. And there's so many things here, just like the sound of palm trees and the wind at night and like the mixture of salt air at a specific temperature that I don't know, I make me very happy in a way that something from your childhood really does.
See, it's called deja vu dust.
It's
deja vu dust. When you have it, like you leave your dust wherever you go, and then some places that memory comes back. It's me. You may not have been there, but it's coming from like that vault. It's like the dusting of the vault.
Totally.
And it's the coolest thing. Like when you go somewhere and you kind of remember it, it's going to have changed because life changes, but there's that familiarity. I can't even, it's really hard to explain. It's like your coffee is never the same every morning. It's impossible for your coffee to be the same. It's impossible because water changes. Everything's a life force, but it's your coffee. You recognize those flavors, but that's how it is. Like when you go to new, like old places that are still there.
Always
new.
The smells. Yeah. Getting out of the like airplane in a place that I recognize that first smell is always one of the things that gets me the most.
And then when you witness like the lava flows and things from volcanoes, can you, like, I always think back to the ancient people and how they decided there was the god of fire and the god of this and god of that. Because it's so powerful. I can see why they would bow down because yeah, I can see totally why they would manufacture gods of the elements because the elements are so in your face. And when the elements get mad, you're in trouble. You know, like during an earthquake, the god of that, you really like pissed me off.
I'm gonna get it.
Mystical.
Yeah.
There's steam vents with smoke everywhere.
Yeah. It's like, dude, it's a theater production by nature. You know,
I think now I believe that the most expressive word in the English dictionary is dude.
It is dude.
I mean, it's really multi-use. Yeah.
But so I mean.
Listen, I come from Southern California. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, dude is like it's forever. It's I know everybody. It's like I just want to go to Ridgemont High now. That's it. Like we're stuck in there, but you know it's okay. It's okay. But so now, so you're doing it. So you think it's going to be in like an 80-page book? Do you think it will get bigger or do part one, part two?
I'm gonna try to cap it and like.
That's hard.
Finish up the section. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, one of the things that I really believe in is learning how to finish things, how to, like, stop working on something. And I teach comics a lot, and it's one of the things I always try to impress upon students is that it's a skill that you need to learn. So coming up with the structure that feels adequate and then doing it there and then leaving it is important. But I'm not at that stage yet. I've got the 80 pages roughed out and I'm sort of filling it in the thumbnail stage, we'd call it basically in comics. So it's all sort of sketches and the words are all there. And then it's just a question of filling in the detail and making it beautiful.
How will people be able to get this?
Up in the air, there's a few. It'll be published. I'm figuring out with who. There's a couple different options. And then it'll also appear online. Again, there's a couple venues. Like I might try to excerpt a part of it on the Nib. There's another place that I'm associated with called Tiny View that I might see if I can run it as a whole series because the Nib doesn't really publish stuff as long form as this. But basically it has homes. I just need to figure out those homes and
once it's finished. Fun.
I mean, a lot of it, basically I work digitally. So I'm able to kind of go outside with my iPad and draw in the field.
Wow.
And that's awesome.
Cool.
What if you don't have Wi-Fi or data?
And that's a change from last time I was here. The tech, what's that?
Can you do that without it being like hooked up to the internet and anything? Just be able to draw without it being?
Yeah, I mean, I just have to have, last time I was here, I couldn't. So that's been a big change in how I work. Last time I was here, I was really tethered to the desk. So I need to go out, interview people, take pictures, then come back and draw it. But this time I can either leave with my laptop and iPad or iPad. And as long as the files are downloaded, the technology has actually improved enough in the year and a half that I can work on the files, you know, at the beach.
Nancy's listening intently. I know.
On a
Nancy's
volcano
listening.
If I'm drawing the volcano.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's what Nancy needs
but,
to do.
Yeah,
that's
so that's
so
cool.
Cool.
I'm trying to do a lot more like natural, you know, drawing from life. And since all these places that I'm writing about are en route to my kids' preschool from where I live, I just drop them off and then stop at the way home at like the ruins of Kawa Fishing Village or Punalu'u, which is where that development in the jungle that I was talking about are. And, you know, go there with my iPad pictures and then draw there. And that's really cool. It's a totally new working method for me.
You're there for a little bit longer than the normal residency, which is cool. I mean, because the whole COVID thing shook everything. I know even national parks are, you know, like, oh, can we do residencies? Can we not? It's a difficult time. And I know that, you know, Tanya Ortega, you know, founder of National Parks Arts Foundation, she's kept things moving. We're still going.
Yeah.
We're still doing things. So the big events don't happen normally every artist has an event that, you know, the public are welcome to, and it's really great. But now things are being done more digitally and actually reaches a lot more people that way, which is cool, depending on what you're doing. But what I want to know is, like, are you, like, with us, like, the way we travel, I've got so much footage. I'm like, holy cow, man, I could write books for 10 years and never be done. Are you feeling that, like, you're going to have something else on top of what you're doing? Like, you're drawing, or, okay, what am I going to do with this? Because it can't all get into that one publication, right? Because you're editing down. You're being the king of, I'm going to close this off, right? But then you've got all this other stuff. You're going to do stuff. You know you are, right?
No, it's true. I mean, I keep adding stuff. Like the, I found this fishing village that I hadn't known about the first time I was here by following where cars were parked off the highway. And now it's like a big part of the second half of the book that I'm working on right now. But also, I have other stuff to do. Like, I'm working on that plants book. I am always sort of juggling like three or four projects. So I can never let myself get too kind of cute about any single one. Otherwise, all the plates come down. So, basically what I need to do is I've figured out the structure for it and got it all down now in the first like month that I've been here. And the residency is over. I'm just staying in Hawaii because my wife can work from home wherever because of COVID, and my kids are in a preschool here. So we're just going to stay. I'm going to work on this book and finish it, and work on the other book and finish it, and then we'll go back to Berkeley.
Wow. Cool. And what a cool place to do a plant book. I mean, Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, there's
seriously
a lot of plants to draw.
There's some interesting ones. Oh, I want to see your plant book.
Very
I'm
big
so,
leaf.
I'm
it's
so
about
into
plant domestication
plants.
And so corn and wheat and broccoli and all
interesting.
Sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that's
broccoli
interesting.
From
yeah.
another, I think broccoli comes from
yeah,
outer space.
Yeah, I can tell that stuff. So all those were coming out from Little Brown. I think the first one, the animal domestication book, which is called Pests and Pets, is, I think it's coming out this year, actually, in
the
fall.
Oh, you got to keep us posted.
Unless it's been delayed.
Oh,
yeah,
when
yeah,
it comes
yeah,
out,
totally.
Please, let's do that. I mean, we pet sit as we travel the country, right? And so we're doing this whole thing with animals, and it's very fascinating. Mm-hmm. We've done so many shows about puppy mills and why are we doing this to animals? Why do we have pet stores? A whole like, and then one of our friends, Eddie Maldonado, remember Nancy? Mm-hmm. He used to co-host our shows, and he one day we were doing a show. He goes, "Well, why do we have to have pets at all?" And everybody's like, "Oh, what do you mean?" He's like, "Take a look at what we're doing. Like, you're domesticating a wild animal." Just so you can control it. Like, if we just stopped it, you know, this whole crazy thing, like, everybody freaked out. And I'm going, you know what? You know, it's like, we love animals. And there is a connection between humans and animals. But please do keep us posted on your books and your plant book. I'm such a crazy plant person. Like, I feel like there's this DNA. Anyway, I will trip out and be weird forever about plants and The Secret Life of Plants. Have you read it? Have you read The Secret Life of Plants?
No, I'm playing through a stack of books as high as my arm right now.
Dude,
that's on it. I just finished Amber Ware's, which was about wheat. It was great.
You have
to
read The Secret Life of Plants.
He's got it.
All right.
Dude,
you have to put it at
I'm
the top.
It. Dude.
You know what? We gave most of our books away on the road, but that was one of the books that had to stay. That is a book that, And then there's The Day of the Triffids.
Oh, I read all
Everyone
of Michael
needs
Pollan's
to watch
stuff again for this project.
Oh,
I
haven't read any
fun.
Of his stuff, which is ridiculous.
Oh, it's great.
Like, I know, I really should.
He's a fun one.
I've read articles and stuff, but I really need to get into his books. But The Secret Life of Plants is trippy cool. And I just love
it's
the fact
awesome.
That we are sharing DNA share DNA. I know it's tiny, but it just shows that we're all connected and it's beautiful. And that's why we need to be nice to each other. We need to be nice to the trees. We need to hug them. Otherwise, they'll turn into triffids and chase you. Anyway, Tell me you've watched that. No, you've got to have watched The Day of the Triffids. Oh,
I have not watched The Day of the Triffids.
Oh,
come
add
on.
That. You've got to watch The Day of the Triffids. It's classic old school sci-fi craziness.
Oh, come on.
And Donald Sutherland is in it. Come on, it's
you
funny.
You have to watch it.
I do
really
like Donald Sutherland.
Yeah. You have to watch that and then go read The Secret Life of Plants.
I know. No, don't do it all at the same time. Take a break.
No,
between.
Do it.
Andy, thank you so much for joining us. It's always fun. It's so much fun having you on the show.
Yeah,
I love
great.
It. I love what you're doing. Please do, like I said, anytime you publish a book, you're welcome back on here. We want to know. We want our audience to know good stuff that you're doing. And National Parks Arts Foundation just is so cool with what they do and keep going through this whole COVID thing. With the residency programs and everyone, nationalparksartsfoundation.org is a place to go and I don't like saying the word submit, it's just not right, but apply, apply yourself. And sometimes you won't get it and sometimes you will. So if you don't make it the first time around, do it again and just keep going for these park opportunities and sign up for their newsletter and follow them on social media because these opportunities change all the time. It has to do with grants. And they also work with different organizations. Like I know in Hawaii, they also work with the Friends of Hawaii Volcanoes National Parks. And, every place is different. So there's ones in Chaco. I think, are you going to go to ever apply for another one, like outside of Hawaii, like Chaco or Fort Union?
Now that I have this thing where I just write a book about wherever I'm at, it's a great gimmick. Give me a residency in a beautiful place, and I'll make a book about it.
Yeah, I know. Cool. I love this, what you're doing. And then
there
listen,
you go. It's a good
Death
hustle.
Valley,
you got to find
you
a good
You could do the desert plants of Death Valley, man. Death Valley plants are interesting if you can find them. No, they're there. They're there. All right, everyone, again, keep up with Andy at andywarnercomics.com. He's on Twitter as well. And, of course, again, nationalparksartsfoundation.org. You keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Every first Friday, we get to chat with artists in residence, which is awesome. It's one of our favorite things to do. They're out there in the field, and it's just beautiful. But we always like to close with music on our shows. And, if you're in Hawaii, we're going to play Makana's music. And I'm sure we did it before. But this album, it's his latest album. It's called A Hawaii Interlude. And the front cover, the cover art is like, you remember Brutalism, the architecture of Brutalism, right? And it's kind of like those old timeshares. You can see these like apartment/condos. I'll have to ask him on the show about this, but it's like that. And then here's the beautiful beaches and everything. But there's this other side of Hawaii being totally built up. And he really does stand up about those timeshares taking over that last piece of land or beach. He's just an amazing activist and an amazing, amazing musician, one of the top Slack key guitar players in the world. And so we're going to play A Day in Hawaii, and it's a beautiful song, and we're going to play it now. So, again, you can keep up with Makana at makanamusic.com. Thanks so much, Andy.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Hey, you take care and stay in touch. Here it is, A Day in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And listen, Andy gets to have a gazillion of them. That's so cool. Here it is.
That's true. Yeah, for now.
You're lucky.